Brunch is back, ladies and gentlemen, and Yelp Guest Manager is here to help the Sunday Funday crowd find your restaurant. Yelp Guest Manager is the no-fee way to fill your tables, so prepare to spend less. But you're also getting a whole lot more. We're plugging your restaurant into the biggest consumer network in the U.S., creating massive awareness with the folks looking to book now. Sign up for Yelp Guest Manager today to get delayed billing for 60 days to start the brunch season off right. Go to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp to grow your restaurant, not your expenses. Terms apply. Now here we go.
People have to understand you, understand what your concept is, and they have to, in this today's world with the prevalence of social media, they have to understand it in a way that they can easily repeat it to someone else. They can't tell someone else about it. It doesn't matter how great the experience was because they can't get other people to come.
Welcome to Full Comp, a show offering insight into the hospitality industry, featuring restaurateurs, thought leaders, and innovators. Served up on the house. Are you on track to hit your profitability goals for this year? If you're struggling to hit your numbers, I might be able to help. Here's how I do it. Every year, I offer 5 complimentary growth sessions to restaurant owners looking to scale. In this call, we'll examine your current situation to see what is and isn't working. We'll identify your growth possibilities by the close of the year. We'll uncover the number one thing holding you and your business back. And we'll develop a growth plan that will get your business results. Go to planwithjosh.com to schedule one of the 5 complimentary growth sessions. They're going to go quickly. They always do. Do you ever wish you had a crystal ball that could tell you what your customers will care about in the future? Candace McDonald and Andrew Freeman have built that crystal ball. Today, these marketing experts run us through their 2024 industry trends report so that we can stay ahead of the curve and at the forefront of our guests' minds.
So we're very delighted that the report is presented by both agencies, Carbonate and AFCO. And AFCO is 18 years old. It's been based in the Bay Area for all 18 years. We started primarily as a marketing agency that had pre-social media, even almost pre-email, basically doing marketing, public relations, and partnership development and even at that point, concept development for primarily hospitality clients. And then because of my previous background with Kimpton, we were getting a lot of requests to do branding and brand development and naming. And so Candace joined the company and we, in addition to doing great event work, she started to head up the what we were calling the branding or concept development division of AFCO. And then about 5 years ago, Candace and I started to talk about what if we broke it off and did a separate company that really we could really develop out our concept development and storytelling skills and then brand development. And Carbonate was born and we launched it 3 months before the pandemic hit. And our primary basis was hospitality. We very proud of ourselves that we've survived and thrived and even been able to produce the trend report through all this. And now both companies have sort of veered into other specialty areas, but really around lifestyle, good living, dining, CPG, wine, spirits. Candace's team has gotten into some food tech and it's been really exciting. And then the trend report started, 16 years ago. And it's interesting, it started with the same person who's still our lead strategist, Lee Steele. And it was primarily done for our clients. We just thought, this would be so great. We can get ahead of the trends for our clients. And then we put it out there. And then some of the reporters that got a hold of it said, you should do this for the industry. And we just decided to do it when it's grown and it's gotten national acclaim. And we're here, I think, partially because of our trend report. And so we've just been really proud of it, but it's completing our 16th year. It's definitely a labor of love and a lot of hard work. And so I'll turn it over to Candace to tell you a little bit more if I missed anything, Candace, that you want to tell everybody about.
No, it was pretty thorough. I mean, I think who can complain about having to write a report about what we're going to eat and drink in the coming years? So we say that it's hard work, and it is, but it's also fun and delicious to figure out what we should be talking about. But no, I think you cover both companies. And I think one of the reasons why we write this report, and I think it's something that it's a very natural extension of what both of the agencies focus on, is, you know, we want to understand what's driving people to make their food and beverage decisions. What gets people excited? And I think one of the things that makes our report, you know, because I like to think of this report as like an early indicator report. It's not quantitative. So we're not saying this is out there and already massively happening. We're looking for what is going to happen and why might that be? What about these things reflects kind of how people are making those decisions about where they want to spend their dining dollars. And so we like to think of it as an early indicator report. And not only that, but also how do you use this in your business too? I mean, at the end of the day, we're not a market research firm. We're both marketing agencies. And so we like to think of this as what's coming and how do you use it to put butts in seats or heads in beds at your hotel?
Where do you source the information from? How do you find out what's coming next? What are the bellwethers of that?
Well, I think I just have to say our poor lead strategist, Lee, does a lot of the legwork. And honestly, she's brilliant because once the report hits, all of a sudden we start seeing like breadfruit this year. You know, it's just now I'm seeing it everywhere. So she's doing a lot of research. But I think what I do, and I know Candace does too, and I think our whole team does, is whenever we see a trend or we think something's trending, from dining out or staying at a hotel or just our travels or friends, all of our work is with industry people too. So we're sort of immersed in it. So we just start to, what I call it, the virtual whiteboard, we just start to throw stuff up there. And then as it gets closer and closer, we have a lot of meetings about, okay, what do you think? Is this real, not real? And Leith is our sort of our guide about saying, okay, yeah, she definitely is the final cut.
One of the other things we do is we look at a lot of menus and we try to cover, I mean, the one thing that's been, I would say, consistent change over the past even 10 years is just the fact that, you know, it used to be sort of the trends would start in the coasts and work their way in. And that's no longer the case. You know, I think we're seeing a lot of talent and creativity in all parts of the country as well. And so we try to pay attention to geography. We try to pay attention to different types of restaurants. We try to look a little bit at CPG to see like, okay, what might that be? What's happening there? And is that a reflection of anything that started in restaurants and hotels and might be coming in a bigger way? So I think it's looking at a lot of diversity in terms of geography and styles of restaurants, and then looking at a lot of menus. There's a lot of time that's spent, at least for the food and beverage trends, a lot of time spent on looking at menus.
How long does it take to put the report together? Because I guess kind of tangentially to that, how long does a trend last?
I'll start there. We worked the whole year on the report. I mean, it's almost like the minute this one comes out, we're already looking at next year. I think it gets closer and closer, and we'd see like, and you know, by the way, some of the trends that are on there are not mind blowing. There are things that we've seen that we think are going to tip the point, and others are just sort of like fun. So I'd say pretty much, Candace, wouldn't you say the whole year? I mean, it's a year in process for the report. Yeah.
I mean, really, it's sort of the last, I would say starting in August is when it really starts to come together and we start to kind of go through with a fine tooth comb. We put out a number of different mini articles and things throughout the year of things we're seeing. So sometimes something is a little bit of like in the moment thing that may not make it as an annual trend, you know? And I think to your question as to how long does a trend last? I mean, it's a very interesting thing. Sometimes there's things that we spot that are just, as Andrew said, fun and let's see where this goes. Other times, I mean, there was a period of time where we started talking about vegetable-based fare and that then vegan cuisine. And then that lasted for several years because we couldn't ignore it. It was happening and it was evolving and changing. But it's not, is that a trend? I think that's a major shift in how we've eaten. So I think we see some of that. And I think some of that too, even with the cultures and the, you know, we have our cuisine of the year. Those are not necessarily, we're not calling out Korean food as a trend per se, but more acknowledging that, you know, we're seeing a lot of it happening and it's gaining in popularity. So we try to kind of have a mix of both. I think things that sort of make you go, huh, how could I use that? Or that's interesting and fun. And then some things that are along the lines of you'd be silly to ignore this.
What was your second question though, Josh? I think there was a two-parter there. What was the second part?
The second part is how to engage, right? So there are tens of thousands of independent restaurateurs listening to the show now, right? So they find out that Korean is the cuisine of the year, right? So then Are they adding a Korean item to their menu? Are they, and being hyperbolic, but there are people out there that are like, oh, I want to open a new concept. I don't know what it is. I read this report. Korean food is trending. Maybe I should do that. I think that some of it is informational, but then some of it you can actually execute on. But for the people reading it, how do you parse out the two? How do you know what to act on and what is purely informational?
Well, I would say that my first impression there is that conceptually, you have to look at your concept that you're working with. Like if you're an Italian trattoria, there probably isn't any room for Korean. And I think that's actually where some people make mistakes, right? They think, oh my God, Korean's hot right now. We should put it on our menu. I would say that hotel companies really use our report to look at how to impact their lounges, their restaurants, because they're looking at a more global audience, global sense. And some of this is just flavors. I do think that if you're opening a new concept, you might look to our report. Then I would say the next thing you should do is call Carbonate and have them do a market study to see if is there a need for a Korean restaurant in this market, right? So I think that being aware of what's trending is very important for anybody in the business because it's going to impact some decisions you might make, some decisions you might not make. But I think everybody, I can tell you that there are a lot of people that use the report that then go to train other people or their teams with the report, especially as it relates to the drink trends and to some of the marketing ideas and the design ideas that we have in there, just so that they are aware when they're planning a new menu suite. This is what, according to Carbonate and AFCO, this is what's trending from a design point of view. So I think it informs a lot of decisions, but I don't think, I hope people aren't saying, okay, we're going to kill our concept and make it Korean because that's what AFCO and Carbonate say. I think it's too much pressure, but I do think that a lot of people are using it to guide their decisions. Yeah.
And then there's this interesting dichotomy between the branding section and then this trends report, right? Because with the right brand, that brand is evergreen. Not to say that it doesn't evolve over time, but there's consistency. One of the things that I say, I coach restaurateurs, and I say all the time, restaurateurs prize innovation. They love it. Everybody wants to be the most innovative restaurateur on the planet. Customers prize consistency.
Yeah.
They want to go to the same restaurant on the same day, at the same time, sit in the same chair and eat the same shit. And so there's this interesting dichotomy in having this consistent brand. And then through the lens of trends, say, does this trend actually resonate with my brand? Which I would assume is a lot of the guidance that you're offering.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think within every menu, there's sort of, I don't know that we use this as a science, but there's sort of like 70% of your menu has to be what your customers want, what your guests want. And then you've got kind of license to play and the other part of it, because it's a little bit of that, give them what they want, give them what they need. I mean, people don't know they're going to love something until they try it, right? So you know, you don't want to kill creativity in the room. I hope that's something that people can use this report and think of, because I think one of the things that, big thing that we saw over this past year, especially in coming out of sort of this survival pandemic time that we've all been in, is license to play. I hope that there's some of the more creative chefs in the room at any given table of every restaurant can look at this and say, hey, I'm a barbecue restaurant and we do very traditional Southern barbecue, but maybe if my, you know, I've always wanted to explore Korean, maybe there's like an LTO that's a, you know, a Korean sandwich and we just see if this makes our guests happy. Lots of other things like that. And so I think there's, whether it's that or whether it's let's up the ante on our cocktail game. And I saw this really cool presentation of cocktail towers that was in this report. So, you know, maybe we can play with that and do our version of that. I think that's what we aim to have this report be, is really creative inspiration and sort of a license to take kind of an early indication of something and then put your own spin on it. As two creative marketing agencies, we never want to be super prescriptive to our clients. We've had the privilege of working with some insanely talented and creative chefs and restaurateurs and all sides of the spectrum. And I think that's really what we want, is like, let's use this as a point of inspiration, because that's where the best restaurant experiences happen.
Well, and I think that when we look at like you saying that Philadelphia is the trending U.S. city, I think that any restaurateur interested in seeing kind of what's now and what's next should just eat their way through the city.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And that was your experience as well.
Yeah. Josh, I went to Philly after we did the report because Leith really was the one who called, and then I felt like, well, I'm going to be on the East Coast. Let me go check this out. And it really is truly an amazing food city right now. And I know Candace's team is working on a project that where they may end up in Philly for a research portion of the tour. And Philly has, like, I can't say enough about it because the New Yorkers have landed in Philly. It even has a Southern inspiration coming up to Philly. And also it feels a little safer than New York or like one of the major cities to do a restaurant where, and there's a couple of restaurant groups there that are really just doing amazing. Well, Stephen Starr, that's where he got his start. And his restaurants, I went to three of them while I was there and they were just incredible. So I was very happy Leith called that city because I was like, wow, you know, when you have that moment of like, she was right. So,
And I'm from Pittsburgh and I let it happen. So there's a little east-west part of the state thing happening. And I let it happen because it was a good call. But
yeah.
You guys spend a lot of time talking about cocktails, all different facets. You used phrasing that I thought was really interesting. You talked about culinary inspired cocktails. Define that for me and then give me a few examples of that.
Well, I mean, when you have cocktails that are inspired by food, that's really what this culinary cocktail is about. There's the Anvil Pub and Grill in Birmingham has this Everything Everywhere cocktail that is smoked salmon infused gin and caper brine and, of course, served with everything bagel spice. It's really hard to kind of ignore that inspiration is coming from the kitchen. So it's just an interesting thing, I think, because we are seeing consumers that are and guests that are sort of drinking differently. And so I think there is this sense of like, well, we have to wow them a little bit because we need to maybe charge. Maybe they are going to only order one drink. So let's make it something that's really unique that justifies a higher cocktail price, right? I think that's one of the things that we're seeing across the board is that we're all sort of reconciling the fact things just cost more. So we have to charge more because we're in business, right? And so, but guests still want value. And so how do you infuse value into everything that you do? And a lot of this stuff in the report goes for that over the top, like, wow, I wouldn't have thought of that myself. Or I actually can't make that at home because chicken soup martini I don't have the ingredients or whatever. So I think there's just a little sense of that aha moment that you need to deliver at everything. And that a lot of our cocktail trends, especially, I think, lend themselves to that.
Gosh, there's also the full item utilization of kitchen and bar coming together and working together collaboratively to create interesting flavors in cocktails. Now, granted, Double Chicken Please, the bar in New York, everybody should check that place out because their cocktails are inspired by food. And I think that it's not for everybody. Or somebody might still want a Tito's and soda with a lime and call it a day. So this is a little more for the adventurous diners, if you will. But the Caprese Martini, which, you know, was infused tomato infused water and vodka with olive oil and garnished with mozzarella. Like that's just feels like a really fun drink. Those are the gotta haves, right? The gotta haves are like when you go there, you gotta have this. Yeah. And so everybody needs those.
And there's also something to be said for the most trends that have sticking powers tend to sort of start from a place of familiarity. And so I think the Caprese Martini is an example of that because it doesn't look anything like a Bloody Mary, but there's a little bit of it's reminiscent of a Bloody Mary. It's a clarified. And so it doesn't, again, it doesn't resemble everybody's favorite brunch cocktail, but when you drink it, you have a sense of like, oh, I've had something like this before. And this is a new version of that. And I think that's true for a lot of these cocktails and a lot of these things that are going to have staying power is that it starts from a place of familiarity for the guest.
It's like that movie trailer concept. So I mean, I came up as a restaurateur in Los Angeles. And one of the things they said was that any business you ever create, you create it like they pitch movies. So it's this meets this. So it's the Bloody Mary meets an espresso martini. And then you're talking about two familiar things and then using two familiar things to create something entirely new. I think the undertone of the trend report and the reason that people read it the way they do is because we're all chasing the same thing, which is perceived value. You talk about clarifying alcoholic beverages so that they're completely clear, which I would argue adds little to no tangible value, but probably an incredible amount of perceived value. When you guys chunk up, when you look at these trend reports year by year by year, what you're seeing is you're seeing this evolution in what people value. And so my question would be, in 2024, what does the consumer value? Are they looking for large portions? Are they looking for more cocktails, centrally focused culinary efforts? What are they looking for?
I think it's that aha moment. I think coming out of the past few years, we saw that people, they want a sense of connection. And they want a sense of socialization and they want to have something that they couldn't, we're still enjoying, I think, in some respects, that sense of reconnection that's coming out of the pandemic. And I think at the same time, everything is more expensive. And that hasn't slowed down the way people are spending in many markets. But there is a bit of, I need my experience to make me smile, or I need this experience to be something that I would never have dreamed of. So I think they're valuing creativity in ways that we haven't seen in the past few years. And I think that there's a sense of, how do we bring the technique together? How do we bring those moments or ingredients that people are less familiar with? And at the same time, I think there's also, we're seeing Gen Z is starting to dine, right? And they're the most diverse generation we've had. And so I think at the same time, we're also seeing inspirations come from a wide variety of cultures that are maybe might have felt like a novelty a few years ago, but are not. This is just people's experiences. And now we're reflecting those experiences and those cultural influences more accurately to reflect how people are, people's backgrounds and dining. So I think those two things coming together are giving a sense of exploration, certainly to food and drink.
If it's okay, I'll throw in. Last night in San Francisco, we almost had what I would consider close to a hurricane. But we had a James Beard Taste America event, and we decided to go forward with it. And of the 450 RSVPs, 432 of them braved the weather to come, because I think to Candace's point, they just want that connection again. They want to be social again. They wanted to hobnob with all these great chefs that everybody made it. To Candace's point, there's this perception of value now at whatever level you're at, perception of value and quality and fun, right? So the restaurants that have come out of the pandemic and that have grown, and it's so different by market, right? But there's just a sense of like, even at the lowest level, because even at McDonald's, you're paying a lot more than you used to pay. So there's this just sense of like, am I getting the value for the money I'm spending? Because I may be going out one less time a month, or I may be trying to stretch my personal budget a little bit. So I just want to know that I'm not going to be disappointed and I'm going to have fun. And so restaurants, and I'm going to have fun and it's going to look great. And I'm going to be able to try something that I never tried before. You know, so it's like, there's a lot of pressure on restaurants right now, Josh.
And the service is going to be great.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. And I'm done with the QR codes. I want to hold the menu again. And so I think there's a lot of pressure on restaurants right now.
You know, I would say that in my early days as a restaurateur, I would look at a report like this, I would throw a clarified espresso martini on my menu, and I would just wait for the troves of people to come in, right? And I would wait for all the press that I'm going to get. Is the only person with a clarified espresso martini on the menu? I think the trends are great, but I mean, you guys are professional marketers. It's just one piece of the puzzle. So talk to me about how you would get the word out, how you would become pressworthy while capitalizing on these trends.
Yeah. Well, I would say this too, like, you know, you got to make a good espresso martini and you got to be consistent, and the quality of the experience has to be consistent, and the bartender has to be great. There's all these things. Well, that's what we do, right? That's our jobs, and whether you can work with us or not. But I'd say it's a combination now of making sure that your social media is in a really good spot now, because that's where a lot of people go, especially for an espresso martini or a towering cocktails or whatever it is, they're going to find it. Candace has trained me to know that people go to Google more than they do to the direct websites right now. So you want to make sure your search is in really good position.
No, so people go to your Instagram.
Instagram. What I was saying is they don't go to, I think a lot of the ways people find restaurants now is via Instagram or TikTok. But I do think that making sure that, you know, you have to have a marketing plan. You are a business. And so whether it's like neighborhood marketing, where you're getting to know your partners around the block from you, and it's your social and it's your email campaigns, and you're building your lists. And if you're going to decide to open up a restaurant, there are those lucky ones that they open up their doors, they get the great reviews, and boom, they're done. But even now, more and more restaurants, you have to treat it like a business, and you need to make sure that you're budgeting for marketing, because you can have a great concept that nobody knows about. And then you have to have, and if you're lucky enough to have the budget to work with Carbonate or AFCO, that's even better, because then restaurateurs didn't get into this business to be marketers, right? So sometimes they're just like, I don't want to do this. I don't know, but I know I need it. So identify that you need it and then figure out how you're going to do it.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. We work with a wide variety of clients. We have an international bubble tea brand that has 200 plus locations in the US. We have hotels that have independent restaurants within their properties. And we work with smaller multi-concept restaurant groups. And the thing that is consistent, all of these different companies have different infrastructure. They have different marketing budgets. They have different, even different business objectives, right? But at the end of the day, what really, I think this is what Andrew's getting at, is that you have to have two parts. One, you have to be interesting. So you have to make sure that what you're doing is you're giving something to talk about, right? That old saying, it's still true. And that's sort of where we look at these things. There's that consistency piece and giving people what they want, and then finding ways to surprise and delight them to get them to come back for more. And I think the best, that kind of thinking paired with really consistent marketing efforts is what drives traffic. There is no silver bullet for restaurant marketing. You know, Andrew alluded to, like, maybe there's once in a while, there's a great restaurant that opens, they get great reviews and they're packed from the day they open. That's once in a million, right? Everything else has to be about consistency. It's not just enough to have social channels and be posting on them fairly regularly. You have to have a paid budget that goes with them. How are you bringing new people to those channels? Same thing with your website. You can't just put up your website and hope for the best. Is it a source of information for everything about your brand? You know, how consistent are you in those things? The media, you know, we have a very different media landscape than we did a couple of years ago. And it's no longer the case that you can just kind of put the news out there and you'll be included in something. You have to really think thoughtfully and building those relationships with journalists in order to be thought of. So I think the biggest thing is give them something to talk about and then talk about it really, really consistently.
Well, and marketing looks different today as well. One of the things you talk about is a trend, and I think it's been a consistent trend for a while now, is user-generated content. I think we've seen a ton of it outside of the industry. I think it's become the standard within the industry. I think that it was primarily influencers, people that were compensated for creating that content. But now we're seeing it trend in the way, in the same use case we're seeing outside the industry, where it's everyday people talking about their experiences in the restaurant. For your clients, how are you guys finding effective ways of cultivating that user-generated content?
The key is really about community. I mean, that's really what you're trying to do. And what we're finding is that, and understanding who you're targeting in terms of who's your audience for your restaurant or hotel, because I think that really zeroes in on what kind of user-generated content you need. I think we know that there's a very distinct difference between millennials and older Gen Z and younger Gen Z. And younger Gen Z is so skeptical of everything that they're being told. And that even sometimes applies to influencer content, right? And so the reason why user-generated reviews are popular, or user-generated content is popular, is because it feels real. It feels like another person's opinion, that when I look at that picture that somebody that's not a professional photographer took of that dish, like, I, that might be the experience I get. So they're really skeptical. And that's for good reason, right? I mean, sometimes things aren't what they appear to be. And so I think there's that piece of that realness that is coming through in social media in different ways. And that's very different depending on your audience, because there's older millennials and, you know, boomers, they want everything to be pretty and nice, and they think it's strange when it's not. And so I think understanding who you're targeting and sort of bridging that gap is really important in terms of what kind of user-generated content do you want to share? How do you want to interact with people? There's definitely a difference among demographics, and you can compare Taco Bell's Instagram feed to Nordstrom, right? They're reaching different people. There's something to be said for considering your demographics when you look at user-generated content.
How is AI playing a role in 2024?
Oh,
yeah.
Lots of roles. I mean, we're playing around with it a lot from a design point of view, and that's been really fun for our design team. Adobe has rolled out some really cool things where you can put different backgrounds and you can sort of extend, you can create some really cool 3D mockups from photographs. So there's definitely a lot of, it's freeing up a lot of opportunity within the design world. And some of it looks better than others. Anybody that's played around with the ChatGPT version, the image generator, knows that you can have a lot of fun with it, but it doesn't really feel very Frankenstein. So I think there's definitely, we're seeing in the design world, we've certainly had team members that have played around with ChatGPT and sort of looking at that as a time-saving technique. I think we've seen AI in so many different ways already with chatbots and things. Sort of, in some respects, it's a little bit of like, well, we're seeing new applications, but it's not really that new. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of how it impacts our industry. I mean, certainly from a marketing point of view, there are a lot of tools being developed that are time savers. I think at the end of the day, all of these tools are only as good as the information that we put into them, and they absolutely need review. I would say using some of these tools is like having a really, really good intern. You know how you hire somebody and you're like, oh my goodness, this person is brilliant and great, but they aren't experienced. So I do have to help them along, but boy, they give me back something really quickly that I can work with. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing. But we're seeing chefs use it too.
Yeah, I'm coming from the new AI capital of the world, San Francisco, the new AI capital of the world, right? That's what we're calling ourselves because all these AI companies are landing here. And I couldn't agree with Candace more. Like, it's definitely going to be utilized, but it's a starting place because, you know, in our industry, especially because the level of creativity that's required or the level of making sure that information is very up to date is key. And a lot of times AI will pull from maybe older sources or it hasn't been updated. And so you get something that's already outdated because it's just they haven't updated on their end. I had a client a couple of weeks ago because our team has been playing around with their social calendars, having some post being written by AI. And the client actually called us out on it. They said, this is definitely not in the tone of the voice of the client, of us. So I think to Candace, they were right. So to Candace's point, I think it's a great starting point, but then you have to infuse the personality and you have to infuse what makes us, us. Like client yesterday said, I went to ChatGPT and I just had them write a job description for me for this role that they have. And I was like, well, that's a great starting place, but you have to infuse, like, why would somebody really want to work for you? Because these tools can't do that. So I get nervous about it because I feel like the personalities are going to be, yeah, we're all going to become robots and will some of these businesses lose personality.
Well, and I think that's a really, I mean, we've seen it in the design world as well. I mean, when you're, you know, there've been lots of articles written around about the influence of Instagram, right? And so if every designer ends up spending a lot of time scrolling through Instagram, your inspiration sources become more limited and you start to sort of, it's that same echo chamber that impacts, you know, that people criticize social media for outside of politics and other things, but in from a creative place. And I think this is true for chefs and restaurateurs too, you know, looking at a diverse source of inspiration. Because if we're only using AI for something, or you're only using social media and you're not really looking out in the world, you're missing us a lot of inspiration. And we can sort of then end up with this sort of homogenous world if we're not really searching for broad inspiration. And so I think that's one of the dangers of AI is that we end up all kind of spitting out the same stuff, which would be sad for sure.
The trend report gives you the opportunity to look at the industry nationally, globally, looking for trends. And then because of the agencies, you're also working with big brands, medium-sized brands. And for so many independents, and this was true for me for so many years, you're siloed. You don't really know what's going on in the world. And it definitely feels like, yes, this might work for them, but it probably won't work for me. Or yes, they're out there flourishing, making money, but it's always going to be a struggle for me. In ending the interview, I want to pull common threads for your most successful clients. What have they focused on and what has made them successful?
Well, the biggest thing they focus on is they've hired us. So that's the...
That is the through line.
I'm going to say this. As much as I love what we do and how we do it, if it's not a solid concept and they're not there yet, then, you know, then our job is to say, we need to pull this back and start with your key messaging and who you are, right? Because there's nothing worse than bringing a brand to market that's unclear, right? There's a sense that people aren't going to get it. And then the next thing is if it's a restaurant or a hotel, and I know how challenged our world has been, but the service level still has to be there. Even if it's been modified to be fast casual or counter service, whatever the experience you're creating, it's got to be solid, right? And then, you know, sort of once you have those components, then it is this integration of marketing tactics that depending on your audience and who you're at and where you're at, there's still traditional public relations that you still want to get written about naturally, but it's definitely dwindled. So you have to look at, okay, how important are the influencers in this camp, in our concept? How important are all the paid social? So I think if they can't, they have to take the time to think about all that, which a lot of times they're just so busy, they can't. So I think the first thing I would say is make the time because this is your life, this is your business. And it's not going to be the way it was. So as much as I think just admitting to yourself that it's a new post-pandemic world, there's a lot more tech, there's a lot more quest for experience and connection. And so we have to get people out of the mindsets of like, it's a whole new world. I could sing it's a brand new world, you know, whatever that song is. But I do feel like it's the people in the business that recognize that that is a great start.
I think there's really two things that define how you can improve on your success. And the first thing is people have to understand you, understand what your concept is. And they have to, in this today's world with the prevalence of social media, they have to understand it in a way that they can easily repeat it to someone else. If they can't tell someone else about it, it doesn't matter how great the experience was because they can't get other people to come. And then the second piece is marketing can only get people there the first time and the operations has to get them back. And that's the hard part about us as marketers is that we can do all of the things in the world, but we will eventually run out of new guests to bring to the table if you're not giving them a great experience. And so there's a sense of caring about the guest and very deeply caring about the guest experience that every restaurant that I've ever worked with that is lasting and does a great job, they think about the guest before almost anything else. And that to me is the secret of success. You have to really care about giving people a great experience.
Our industry suffers from razor-thin margins. And the only way for us to ensure profitability is to make data-driven decisions. The numbers don't lie. And Yelp for Restaurants just released some incredibly compelling numbers. For starters, Yelp reaches 9 times more customers online than OpenTable. And when restaurants pair that level of visibility with Guest Manager and Yelp ads, they experience up to an 8% lift in diner bookings. Think about what that 8% lift could do for your restaurant's finances. To learn more about how Yelp for Restaurants can support your business, visit restaurants.yelp.com/full comp to learn more today. That's Candace McDonald and Andrew Freeman. To download the Industry Trends Report, visit carbonategroup.com. If you want to tell us your story, hear previous episodes, or check out our other content, go to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp. Thank you so much for listening to the show. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a review. A special thanks to Yelp for helping us spread the word to the whole hospitality community. I'm Josh Copel. You've been listening to Full Comp.